Project documentation and disseminating results. Oftentimes, digital humanities projects tend to forget to document the work that they're doing so that someone else could evaluate it. You know, just like in a book, when you need to evaluate the veracity of their sources, in a digital project, you need to evaluate the veracity of the data, the veracity of the claims that are being made, and the veracity of the process. You know, has the process been honest and upfront about what they're doing and how they're working? You know, if they say that they did X, Y, and Z, did they really do X, Y, and Z, or did they actually contract out to do X, Y, and Z? So types of documentation you can have or should have for your project. And we've talked about this. Copies of all the files, text, data, images, software, etc. That should all be kept as part of your project. Versions for public distribution. And this is financial data redacted. So this is where you may want to distribute copies of grants or copies of budgets to people, and you always or usually redact personnel salaries, okay? Even though that information, if you're at a public institution, is available by somebody calling and asking or going to the library, it's just a nice courtesy to the people you work with not to tell people that they make $100,000 or somebody else makes $25,000. It causes a lot of grief on project teams and project staffs, particularly among graduate students. If they find out one graduate student makes $2,500 more than the other graduate student, even though they came in the same year, they work on the same project, they do the same work. So trying to be polite about that. You want to have a version of all of your documents for your project partners that you send as a PDF. Do not send them individual documents. Do not send them a million PDFs. One PDF, all of the material together so that they have it, they know it's the right version. You want to, if you take handwritten notes during meetings for your personal notes or your team's notes, digitize all of that. Run it through a scanner, run it through for the agendas. You want to keep them by title and date. So what I do with my notes when I make handwritten notes is, or we put stuff on the whiteboard, is I take a photo of that. That photo then gets sent to my email. It then gets stored inside the project folder that I store all my email in. It also, if I need it for something like writing a grant, gets pulled out of email and stored as an image in that project file, okay? Also, documentation, we've talked about this with publicity yesterday, regular blog posts and reports. There are all kinds of tools to crawl and archive, you know, what you post in WordPress or Drupal or anywhere publicly, in obviously reports as well, you know, keeping a copy of those. So what's a project report? Again, we've talked a little bit about this already. Project report is an accounting of all project activities. So this is, we got started, we had to do these things, we did these things, this is what they resulted from. And when I revised the PDF earlier this week, I put in copies of project reports, both the interim and the final reports that I have written to show you guys what that looks like in real form. This is on the Cepheus project that I inherited at South Carolina when I got there. Project reports can be quarterly, particularly if you're dealing with large multi-institutional international collaborations or you're dealing with Mellon. Mellon expects quarterly reports on some of their grants because of the high volume of dollars associated with them. They can be annually. So annually, you guys saw that myth project report that I produce. It is a report that I give to my boss about all of the activities that I am involved in and that I supervise and that our staff does. He then turns around and distributes that to the dean, and the dean then turns around and distributes that to whoever she wants to distribute it to. Most grants have an interim and a final, so halfway through you have to do an interim report that says this is where we're at, and then you get a final thing. You send your project reports to project partners, to administrators, to your funding agency. All of the funding agencies have systems of how they manage this. You just need to follow whatever their system is. But importantly, we also try and post our project reports publicly so that if someone is interested in our project, they can see the work that we're doing in a processed and polished form. So, common requirements, yeah.
So, when you say that you post publicly your project reports, is that on your website or
yep.
Is it a press release?
No, what we have is press releases usually are about individual objects. So, like we've reached a milestone. A project report is comprehensive. That actually, you can go to Myth's projects, and there literally is a little thing on like project reports or drafts or data. All of that's linked in our project pages. Yeah.
Does that include interim?
Yep. Okay. Interim and final. It is up to you whether you want to release those things publicly. you know, be aware that there are people like me and others who will read them. So you want to be careful about not saying anything, you know, hugely embarrassing, like, you know, you're not doing well and you're so not doing well that you're like going to fail. But it's also important to be explicit and honest about it. If things aren't going well, let people know you may be able to get help. So things that go into project reports, a work plan. So what you thought you were going to do versus what you're actually doing. This is particularly important when you have scope changes or your work plan expands and changes its timeline. Changes in methodology, pedagogy, projects, or products, or staff. So when I went to South Carolina, I had to write a change of PI letter. When I posted my interim report for that project, I sent with it that change of PI letter that I'd submitted months before so that they knew that they'd already seen this piece of paper with it. A financial spending report, 90% of the time, you are not going to be involved in producing that. That's going to be whoever handles all the money at your university will produce that. But it's important to remind them when their pieces are due. I've found that sometimes their systems don't stay updated, and so it'll be 8, 10, 12 months later, and they still will not have submitted the final financial reports for your project. Super annoying. Products. Status. So where are you at on the product you thought you were going to have? An article is under review with a link to where it's under review, or a blog post is up with a link to what it is. Conference presentation has been accepted and will be presented with a link to the agenda for that conference. A statement of use. So this is the audience we have reached. This is how frequently they're using it. This is what's going on. I talked about this last night with somebody about Twitter. I think it was Heather Froelich and a couple other people. This is where we do things like we say how many times people visit our website. This is the time we say we have so many followers, so many retweets on this project. This is where if you get cold solicitations from people saying we're interested in getting engaged with your project, I include that information here. Outreach and engagement evaluation. An evaluation of the project, which we're actually going to talk about in the next section, you know, what it means to evaluate your project and what kinds of mechanisms you can use to do that. And the long-term impact. So in your first grant you put in, you said you think this is what your impact is going to be. What happens if all of a sudden everybody loves your project and it spins out of control and goes really great? You want to make sure to mention that. You know, we thought we were going to reach this audience and have this impact, and Michael Barabe of MLA stood up and talked about it, and 6,000 people heard what my project is. Whatever your sort of scale of impact is, you want to make sure to mention it. And also next steps. So in the interim stage, next steps are usually this is what we're going to do to fix it if something's going wrong, or this is what work comes next. In a final report, oftentimes next steps are this is the next grant we're going to do, or this is the project that's going to happen next from that grows from what we've just done. Okay? And like I said, you have examples of this in that example materials packet that I posted online for you guys. What's a white paper? So we had a little bit of this conversation this week already too. A white paper is abstracted from the project report. So it's something that you can take segments of it from the project report directly. But it includes lessons learned and best practice statements. This is particularly important if you're innovating a new methodology or you're innovating a new technology or you're trying to implement something in a way that is unique. So if you're planning on implementing things with undergraduates in a way your university or institution has never done, this is where you put that language about how this changes what your university or your school is doing. The difference is this is a general audience, okay? This is not always your stakeholders that can read these things. Why write a white paper? It's perfect for a peer-reviewed article submission. Most people, when they start writing a peer-reviewed article, should start from the white paper that they wrote for their project and just expand outward, okay? It's a statement of use for the community. So it tells us how we can go to your project and use it for real. This is one of my favorite complaints about digital humanities is that the things that we produce are never reusable by other people without having to like spend years learning how to do it. Good projects, really good projects, have statements of use. So NeatLine, which is a GIS-enabled tool that Scholars Lab just built that came out this summer in July, one of the things that they did, that their lead developers did, and that Wayne and Jeremy did, who are here this week, is they actually wrote little paragraph use cases of how you could use NeatLine in your classroom and as a researcher. And it also suggests new areas of work. So I don't have time to do this follow-on project from what you've just funded me, but here are things you could do if you wanted to do it. And I will tell you that we actually like to cherry-pick other people's, you know, new areas of work things. Tell me you've got a problem and we'll go fix it. That sounds cool. You know, so being explicit about what could come next. This is particularly important when you're speaking back to your disciplinary community about the types of scholarship you want to see. So, you know, Abby's work on religious camps and the Civil War and mapping is something that, you know, that's a new area of work where you can argue about what Southern historians really need to do with GIS. You know, these are the questions you could be asking, and these are the things we are interested in, and this is why you should go do it. Dissertation students, by the way, love or can cherry pick to their heart's content in the digital humanities field. Go read what people say should go next and pick one of those for your dissertation topic. It's a really good way to find a project without having to rack your brain for days or come up with something from scratch. So where do you push out the results? And again, these have been mentioned this week. Peer-reviewed journals. In digital humanities, there are a number of peer-reviewed journals. The two that are most popular for sort of basic digital humanities is the Digital Humanities Quarterly. And the other one is the one that we published in First Monday, which is more technologically oriented and process-oriented than Digital Humanities Quarterly. But there are so many peer-reviewed journals like Vectors and Culturation, if you're interested in rhetoric and communication, and the Journal of Teaching Pedagogy. You sort of pick one. There's so many you could do peer-reviewed articles from. Major conferences, Digital Humanities, MLA, the American Historical Association, the Association of Research Libraries, DLF. Pretty much every, you know, major discipline has a major conference. Feel free to present the same material to, you know, different conferences, slightly differentiated. Please be aware that there are people who will go to DH and MLA and ARL and DLF. The worst thing ever is to go to a conference and see the same exact presentation with the same exact slide deck and the same exact statements. And in fact, this is my pet peeve about keynote lectures by really important people. I have seen, not to be named, a certain technology team present the same lecture 7 times, even though they give it a different title every time. That's not honest. Don't do it. Move on. Where else can you disseminate results? Online via project websites. So you saw the examples of Myth and how we do this. Every project in America should put their, you know, results online. That's how we Google and find research resources. University publicity. When you're putting your project out there, push it out to your university publicity. Sometimes they will pick it up. Particularly universities where they are looking to highlight the work that students do. If you send out your project and you explicitly tell them what the students were involved in, oftentimes they will create entire opportunities for your project to get out there that never would have existed as a faculty member. Offices of research, same thing. You know, if you're doing something totally cutting edge, their office of research wants humanities examples on most campuses, pushing this out. So we get solicited all the time. You know, there's tons and tons of science examples. There's not as many humanities examples. So we push out as much as we can to the Office of Research in the hopes that they pick it up. Major media outlets, if appropriate. So the New York Times has an entire technology section and a bunch of people that write on digital humanities, including the esteemed and reviled Stanley Fish. Feel free to send things to whoever it is that's that reporter who writes a lot on that area. The Chronicle of Higher Education is particularly amenable to digital humanities. Jen Howard and her colleagues are great about getting digital humanities content out there. Inside Higher Ed oftentimes likes to focus a little bit more on sort of the teaching end and the infrastructural end, but they will also push out things. Inside Higher Ed is also very interested, as is the Chronicle, in conversations about academic labor. The graduate students who are here this week will actually be getting an email from me this weekend or Monday. I was in an interview yesterday with the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is why I wasn't here for part of the day. Where the reporter has asked that she needs to contact graduate students who are doing digital dissertations to talk about those dissertations and potentially feature them in a Chronicle of Higher Education article. So I will be emailing the graduate students who are here this week and giving them the opportunity to get their work out there to the Chronicle. So the more you make your project public, the more you potentially can increase the platform and the awareness of what you do. And DH Now, which Simon has already mentioned, DH Now is the online peer-edited aggregator system for digital humanities. And in fact, somebody who's editing next week for DH Now at 6:30 this morning tweeted that they're looking for projects for their DH Now cycle next week. And so you can send them your project link and she'll take a look at it to be included in her editorial comments for next week.